And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and it is my honour and privilege today to introduce our special guest, Sarah Brown. Sarah came to Alice Springs as a remote area registered nurse, where she fell in love with the outback and the people, and now she is Chief Executive Officer of the Purple House, having been a HESTA Nurse of the Year, an Australian Financial Review Boss True Leader, and Australian of the Year nominee, and recently described by a major health fund as a Bush Health Hero. Sarah, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Sarah, you came to the area as a remote area nurse over 10 years ago, and you're still there. Do you like it in the remote parts of Australia?
I love it. It was actually 26 years ago that I first came up to Alice. Fell in love with the desert and remote communities and everything about it, really. I'm not a big shopper, so that helps.
And you've confronted one of the big problems up there with the extraordinary numbers, one in five Indigenous adults and something like 8 to 10 times the non-Indigenous rate of kidney problems in that area. I think you've even said every family in those remote areas is touched by this kidney disease. What do you think are the main causes of this epidemic?
One cause, it is a disease of poverty, dispossession and powerlessness. A lot of the communities in Central Australia, people were living a hunter-gatherer lifestyle for a very long time. It's only recently that whitefellas have turned up. And so if you talk to the doctors, then it's about being born prematurely, about infections when you're a kid, about poor access to healthy food, about it's really important that you stay hydrated, well hydrated, particularly in the summer in the deserts. Whole variety of reasons why people are at an increased risk of getting crooked kidneys.
And I imagine your fizzy drinks, the Coca-Cola loaded with sugar, wouldn't help.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In communities around Australia where people are doing it hard or on a low income, you find the rates of high blood pressure and diabetes are higher. It's really easy to make healthy choices if you've got access to income and to choice. But for lots of Aboriginal families on remote communities, they're doing it pretty hard.
One thing you didn't mention then was alcohol. Is that not seen as a big factor?
No, alcohol's livers rather than kidneys. Mm-hmm. More of an issue is smoking rather than alcohol. So people do get confused, and there are stereotypes about Aboriginal people and alcohol. But the communities where we live and work are dry communities. The great majority of people don't drink at all. So it's really important that people understand this isn't something that people have brought upon themselves by bad decisions. This is about infrastructure and services and access to things that most people in Australia take for granted.
Aboriginal Australians, do they have a predisposition genetically to get this sort of disease?
So we say there's a family tendency. So if you talk to Kidney Health Australia, they say that a risk factor for kidney disease is being Aboriginal. I just think you have to be a bit careful about talking about genetic predispositions. It kind of takes you back to all that times when that was used to stereotype people, and I think we've got to be really careful about that. But certainly Kidney Health Australia would tell you that being Aboriginal is a contributing factor to the likelihood of you getting kidney disease.
When you have this kidney disease, what is the treatment?
Okay, so lots of people have kidney disease, and it means that your kidneys are usually gradually failing over a period of time. So there is a period where if you find out you've got problems with your kidneys, you can slow down the issues. But for lots of people, it gets to the stage where the kidneys aren't working enough to keep people well anymore. And then they say you've got end-stage renal failure, and that's when your choices are either dialysis, either peritoneal dialysis, which people call the bag, where your membranes in your belly are acting as a bit of a filter and you use bags of fluid. That's not many people in Central Australia are on PD, peritoneal dialysis. Most people are on hemodialysis, where you need to sit in a chair and your blood comes out of you and through a machine and is cleaned and then goes back in. And that takes 5 hours every second day, so 3 times a week for the rest of your life. And then the other options, I guess, are transplant. If you're lucky enough to be able to access somebody else's kidney, you can have an operation and have a transplant. Or some people decide that they're not going to have dialysis and that they're just going to pass away. So I guess the people that we're working with primarily are people who are choosing active treatment. They are having dialysis 3 times a week and they're absolutely desperate to be back on in their remote community on dialysis rather than to be stuck in Alice or Darwin or Perth or Adelaide. So we're helping people to get back to their country, to continue living in their houses with their families, working in their community and having dialysis on country.
So is this a special problem for the remote Indigenous people in Australia?
So the issue is people having to leave their communities and their families to access services. So before us, people would have to move, you know, up to a couple of thousand kilometres away from their country and their language group and their sacred sites and their jobs to come and make a new life in a regional centre. And that was really hard for people, and they were so desperately homesick and missing from their family groups. They weren't there to teach their kids and their grandkids their cultural heritage. So, yes, I mean, lots of people all around Australia and around the world need dialysis, but the particular issue for our mob is that having to leave everything that they value to access services, and the strain that puts not just on individuals but also on families and communities.
We might take a short break here. We're speaking today with Sarah Brown, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Purple House. Sarah, you've picked a song for us. Could you tell us which one it is?
Yeah, it's Under the Milky Way by Jimmy Little. And Jimmy was on dialysis and had a transplant and used to pop into the Purple House to sing to us from time to time when he was in Alice Springs.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of the breath fades with the light. Think about loveless fascination under the Milky Way. Got no time wish I knew what you were looking for. Might have known what you would find.
Was Under the Milky Way by Jimmy Little. And our special guest today is Sarah Brown, the Chief Executive Officer of the Purple House. So perhaps, Sarah, you could tell us, what is the Purple House?
The Purple House started, so our official title is Western Desert Ngarrnipa Welcher Palyanjaku Jitiku Aboriginal Corporation. But that's quite tricky for lots of people to say and spell. So for years now, people have been calling us the Purple House. We started with a little normal house in Alice Springs in the suburbs, and we stuck a dialysis machine in the back bedroom and a machine out in Kintore. And that was funded from an auction and of fabulous artworks at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. The men from Kirikura, which is 700 k's west of Alice, painted one picture that sold for $340,000 to Kerry Stokes, who owned Channel 7 at the time. So people from the most remote part of Australia had this auction at the art gallery, raised $1 million in one night, and started our organisation. And the aim was to get people home to country on dialysis. So
that was extraordinarily successful, wasn't it? I mean, it raised over $1 million.
It was huge. Roy and HG were the auctioneers on the night, and they did a great job of opening people's wallets. But it was that thing of having that independent money. It was money that the community had raised itself that meant that people could set up their own model of care. The little house in Alice Springs got painted purple along the way, and people started to call us the Purple House. And then lots of other communities asked for help to get dialysis too. So over the years, we've worked with communities, and they might have had mining royalty money, or they might have something else, an old building or something to chuck into the mix, and we've helped them to get dialysis too. So today we're in 16 remote communities, and we've got the Purple Truck, and we've had help from remote Aboriginal communities, from their art centres, from Rotary clubs all around Australia. All sorts of people have put their hands up to come and help us to get people home. So it's a great story, and it's a great story about community really working hard to help themselves, really.
And I'm wondering why purple. I think you're a bit of an artist, aren't you? Did you have any role in the choice of colour?
I didn't. So it was a grey, boring house, and we had a bit of money from John Howard many moons ago for some renovations, and we had enough money for one pot of paint to paint the front wall of the house. And I was sitting at the kitchen table with an old lady who was the first person to go home on dialysis to Kintore, and I had a colour chart, and I said, we need to choose a colour, what do you reckon? And she went, that one, and pointed to purple. And that was it. There's no other significance to that. Now we've got purple houses and purple trucks and purple bloody everything. I'm like, oh, I have a purple.
Well, I think right from the start, you were the chief executive officer, and I think you had some unusual some unusual directors along the way, including your chairman.
So Bobby West is our chairman, and Bobby is an artist. He won the Telstra Art Award in the Painting Award in 2010. Last year, Bobby rang me up and he said he's on dialysis in Kirikora, so officially Australia's remotest community. Mm. And he rang up and he said, I'm coming into town and I'm going to cook you all lunch. And I thought, 16 years and Bobby's never offered to cook us anything. But he is the boss. So I said, thanks, Bobby, that'd be great. And he giggled and I knew we were in trouble. He said, I'm going to send someone in to show you what I'm going to cook you for lunch. And we were having a meeting and this fella who I'd never seen before turned up. He said, Bobby sent me, and he had a great big frozen feral cat. It still had its hair on and it was complete and it was frozen solid. So we kind of thanked him and patted the cat and hoped it got a better offer overnight. But the next morning it came in and it had been cooked in the coals. Was still, his ears had been burnt off. Bobby whacked it on the kitchen bench and carved it up and made us all pussycat sandwiches for lunch.
Oh, I don't know if I can go on after that.
Well, I don't usually eat meat, but when your boss cooks your lunch, you've got to give it a go, eh?
Oh, dear.
My advice is if anyone offers you pussycat, go for the hot variety rather than the cold. When it's hot, it tastes a bit like lamb. When it's cold, it just is very chewy and tastes like wood smoke.
Yeah, I think I'll take your word for all that.
So there's never a dull moment around here.
No, well, you mentioned one celebrity with Jimmy Little coming in for treatment, and more recently you've had Jack Thompson. Now, how did you come to meet Jack Thompson?
So we got a call from St Vincent's Hospital in Sydney to say that Jack was starting on dialysis and he was really worried that he wouldn't be able to do the things that he usually does out bush. He's got a long-standing relationship with particularly Aboriginal people in the top end in Arnhem Land, and that he was actually considering not starting on dialysis because of how it was going to limit the things he had on his bucket list that he still needed to do. And I was going through Sydney for something else, so I went to see him. And our directors, my bosses, had said, oh, poor bugger, we know what it's like to not be able to do the things out bush you need to do because of dialysis. If we can help, we will. And so Jack and I sat and made plans to get the truck to Arnhem Land for GAMA, the big festival in Arnhem Land, so that Jack could go and everyone else from Arnhem Land could take part in that festival, and then to get the truck to Jabiru to help him to make a film that he'd been working on for 8 years with Simon Baker, the actor from The Mentalist, and a whole heap of Aboriginal actors from Arnhem Land. And so we did both those things, and we had an Australian story about it in February. And he is such a gorgeous man. He's it's a real honour to get to hang out with Jack and occasionally get a text message with him from him full of emojis. He's a random emoji user.
I imagine people are treated equally, everyone that comes through the door, but how do you choose your patients?
It's about where they're from. So originally our directors and our members are Pintabi Luritja people, so it's based around a language group. But then they decided that they were going to help the Walpiri and other communities. So it's around, generally around the communities that we're working with to look after people and get people home. But our directors are also really generous. So they've helped communities get dialysis before they've had dialysis in all their own communities. And certainly over the years, there's been non-Aboriginal people who have needed to get to Alice Springs to visit their family or have had some reason why they need our help. And our directors have been really generous in sharing their limited resources and helping people out. And that's one of the things that keeps me going, is that we have lots of fun, we look after each other, and they're incredibly generous and compassionate and willing to share everything that we've learnt over the years with other people.
Sometimes in the less enlightened areas of this country, and with elections coming up, people talk about Aboriginals getting special privileges and special treatment. What would be your response with what you're providing to the Indigenous people at the moment?
So I would tell people that, for a start, that's rubbish, and that from what we see in remote communities, people are doing it really hard, and lots of people are on no income at all. Despite that, Aboriginal communities are incredibly resilient and creative and determined to look after their families and to look after their country, and are working really hard to do that. And I think the Purple House is a really good example of how people work really hard on a problem that they had, and now the envy of Australia. We've gone from the worst survival rates in the country on dialysis to the best. So people are out there working really hard and trying to make a better life for their kids and their grandkids and their communities, and they have really important knowledge about country and looking after country that they're really happy to share. So I challenge those stereotypes, and I think that a lot of the issues are about how governments choose to spend money and the fact that they don't often really ask Aboriginal communities what they want to do and how they want their lives to go, and that's when money's wasted. So I challenge people to engage, and Aboriginal communities and Aboriginal people in remote communities have incredible compassion and resilience and great sense of humour and lots to teach the rest of us, I reckon.
The Purple House, I mean, you're doing this wonderful work on, with the dialysis, but you also provide some working opportunities. I think you've got, it's quite a big staff you've got now, isn't it?
Yeah, so gone from staff of one part-time, me working up the corner of a lounge room, to 150 staff at the moment, and lots of opportunities for dialysis patients to come in and work with us, for young Aboriginal people to come and do traineeships and learn about all sorts of things. We've got a really successful bush medicine business. We make and sell bush balms and share that the knowledge about those plants with folks. It's a real success story on lots of levels. In Mount Liebig, we not only do dialysis, but we provide the aged care services and school nutrition. So we're feeding all the school kids breakfast and lunch at the school and teaching about good nutrition. So lots of opportunities for work and study, and also to work on trying to reduce the incidence of kidney disease in the longer term. So a real little beacon of hope and joy in the desert, I reckon.
It's absolutely inspirational. Look, we've reached the part of the show where we ask our guests to pick a song again. You've picked another one for us, Sarah. Which one would you like this time?
So this time it's Midnight Oil and it's Beds of Burning. Community of Kintore and Yuntamu get mentioned in this song, and we did have a visit from Peter Garrett and Midnight Oil a couple of years ago, and continue to have support from their fan club, who, when they sell bumper stickers and beanies and stuff, send us a little bit of money that goes into helping us to keep the truck on the road and do all the things we do. So Midnight Oil are good friends for us.
River broke the bloodwood and the desert oak, holding wrecks and boiling diesels, steam at 45 degrees. The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share. The time has come.
And that was Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil, chosen for us today by our special guest, Sarah Brown, who is the CEO of the Purple House. And I think it might be fair enough to call you Napaljari.
Napaljari is my skin name. Yeah, that's it. Hey, thanks. And people can, we've got a Facebook page, The Purple House. Lots of great stories and photos there, and people can get in touch with us if they want.
Great, yes, if you Google the Purple House, and fundraising is always appreciated.
Or just friends. We love busting stereotypes. We have a really active volunteer program if people are coming through and want to come and hang out with us. We like making new friends. So it's not all about the money.
We'd love to hear from any of our listeners. If you'd go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to that website, dadsontheair.com.au. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me a big thank you, Sarah, for being on Dads on the Air.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we'll be back next week with another show.